Into the final moments, Alex Payne trying to keep this side going forward. Haskell takes it on now with just relentless chat, largely about himself. And there's Tindall to add the finishing touch of glamour and World Cup winning stories and a slightly sideways nose. That is how you podcast. A dominant display by the good, the bad and the rugby.
Hello, everybody. Welcome along to this week's episode of The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. It's another meaty one. Europe. What do you think when I mention the miracle match and the hand of back? The great Axel, Jan Evans' tap tackle, Nick Evans' drop goal, the Battle of Brieve. Leinster's comeback, Wilkinson's finale, Stimpson's monster match winner, Martin Williams' head in hands. Howley's try, Bloodgate, last gasp Leota, Munster's 40 phases, Healy's break, All-Ireland at Croker, Toulouse too strong, Stringer's short side, and Ulster's greatest day. Rose-tinted for sure, but memories that will live forever. Every moment and every name mentioned featured over a decade ago. So what would you add in the last 10 years? Answers on a postcard, please. Saracens in the rain in Lyon, La Rochelle in the port, and then certainly I begin to search. I am old and I am biased, but it's not what it was. This week, we are looking at the state of European rugby because it is 10 years since English and French clubs served notice and broke away from ERC, a union-run tournament called the Heineken Cup. The clubs formed EPCR and they rebadged into what is now known as the Heineken Champions Cup. In the studio this week, we have two former winners from the glory days, Hask and Shane Horgan. Welcome to both of you. Dialing in, we've got the GOAT, Ronan O'Gara. Twice a winner as a player, a point-scoring record that will never be beaten, and of course, coach of the current champions, La Rochelle. And also joining us a bit later on, Lee Blackett, the ex-director of rugby at Wasps and the current assistant coach at the Scarlets. We did also ask the chairman of EPCR, Don McKay, to join, but unfortunately he couldn't make the diary align. But hopefully we will catch up with him later in the season. Rog, first of all, lovely to have you with us. Thank you for decorating the background and, you know, the scenes and sights of La Rochelle behind you. First of all, what was the tournament to you as a player?
Good evening. Yes, the background is not by choice. I have to work, actually. I started my day early, three have cruised in onto the couch. And
Well, thank you for giving us a few minutes. Good on you.
Yeah, I think for my generation, I'm 45, it was everything. That was, I think, the huge thing. And I'll probably keep coming back to this point. When you're in Ireland, Wales and Scotland, I think most definitely it was all European Cup. That's what we were reared on. That was the competition. Obviously, with the English and French, there's a league that's hugely valued with a huge history behind it. So for us in Munster, it was the Celtic League, I think, at that stage, and a Celtic Cup, and then there was Europe. But like back in when I played, it was six games, so three home, wasn't it, and three away. So those three games were the biggest games of the year, and like Shane and myself, we would have been obviously play hopefully 10 to 12 test matches a year. If you go on a run, 10 games for Europe and maybe three or four other games in making up in the Celtic League to find that form for Europe and for your country. So for us, it was everything. It was, and I think in Ireland, there was huge, obviously, interest in it. And it just got probably from 2000 on, it just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And where we are today, it's obviously taken a lot of belts and I think for the first time ever, question marks are appearing over it.
I love that Roger ignored 99 and Ulster's win, starting from 2000.
Oh, it's die hard.
When Ulster started rolling, that's the important
easy,
part.
Go easy. That's not fair. Sorry, they did, but there was an asterisk around that because there was no English teams in that European Cup.
Yeah, I know. I remember you saying it to a Humps that the following year. And every year since.
Yeah. But, listen, you never passed out the notes to me, Eve, all your prepared jokes. That's not on, boys.
Same question to you.
Yeah, but no, he is right because, and as much as it pains me, it was Ronan and his team that generated a lot of that feeling for rugby. In Ireland, outside of just the players and outside of the general rugby community, expanding it into something that was bigger. And You know, the way they played, some of the matches that they played in, sort of really gave, you know, I think, the competition, not just in Ireland but across Europe, a real status and a, you know, a kick in the arse, and a put it at a really high level. But in terms of, you know, an Irish player, it was the biggest thing outside of international rugby, and it wasn't even close, to be honest with you. There was an established league in France, there's an established league in England. You know, they were important and still remain important, and I think we can come on to that later on. But from an Irish perspective, we didn't have the history of those leagues that Leinster and Munster and Ulster and Connacht would have been playing in. There wasn't a prestige, so it was all about Europe. And, you know, the prestige and the position that held in Ireland, and to a lesser extent maybe in the other Celtic nations because of the lack of success there, was way ahead of everything else.
You won as a young pup with Wasps. The memories of the significance of that achievement?
Look, I think for me it was the biggest thing behind international rugby too. I think when I first entered the Premiership, it wasn't as competitive as it is now. So you would have games, you would send a second team down or a changed team to play. But when it came to Europe, just the magic around the club, the fact you were pitting yourselves against the best in Ireland, Scotland, Wales and France, those big away games, the intensity, the travelling fans, the romance, it was all there. And I think the fact that Wasps did well in it, and actually I personally feel I played that some of my best rugby in Europe, to challenge myself against, you know, both of these boys. I mean, I never got really close to any of them, but, you know, in terms of the French games as well, there were some huge, huge emotional weekends, which I think was what the reason why I signed for Stade Français when I left Wasp, because I wanted that every week. You know, we would blot out our calendar and go, right, we're playing, you know, Castaway, you know, this weekend, and then have that magic the week preparing for it, the attention to detail, guys on the laptops, you know, extra tackling, extra practice, the buzz, the intensity in training, you know, the fights the boys would be having because they'd be ready to fire, was totally different than the Premiership. And you would have that moment. For me, it became addictive. So when I went to Paris and lived there, I was getting that mostly every week, especially on the away games. You know, I think things have changed now in French rugby, but you would often win your home games. You know, your away games weren't as consistent, but you'd still be travelling to these cauldrons of classic French rugby. And for me, same thing with travelling over to Ireland. You know, I mean, Thorburn Park, it was horrific. You know, it getting filled in left, right and centre, and that was before I got off the bus. So I love it. It was amazing, and I'm sad to see where it is now.
So I think your final point there is a really interesting one, and we will come on to that. Rog, forgive me, because I've done quite a bit of research coming into this, because the way that the three of you speak about what the tournament was, I think is nothing like what we would get from the current crop who feature in it. So the whole point of doing this show is that it's 10 years since ERC broke away, or was broken up and replaced by EPCR. So I wanted to go back and dig out some of the headlines and some of the rhetoric around the great promise of what EPCR was going to do for European rugby. So Telegraph article, 25th of September 2014, Mick Cleary interviewing the Premier Rugby Chief Executive Mark McCafferty. Cleary wrote, "One of the leading figures on the European scene, Prem Rugby Chief Exec Mark McCafferty, says the new Champions Cup will deliver anything between 75 to 100% more revenues than under the old regime." In The Guardian, 24th of October 2014, Rob Kitson interviewed Bruce Craig, owner of Bath. And Craig came along to say, "Television deals for the revised 20-team tournament will yield €57 million annually for the next 4 years. The entire revenue of ERC was €47 million, Craig says. In 4 years' time, he goes on, so therefore by 2018, our overall turnover will exceed €100 million per year. I don't think I know. When we say we're going to do something, we do it. And I can tell you that last year, EPCR revenues were €55 million, so they've gone up by eight, nowhere near €100 million. I can tell you they're actually on the way down as well. I did also enjoy this from the same article, actually. Craig went on to say, when I look at the self-interest in some of the unions and the administrative structures of World Rugby, I just think it's a real shame. They're protecting their own interests and not looking at what's best for rugby. You could copy and paste that and stick it almost anywhere across the game right now. Elsewhere, and this is sort of summarising the whole promise of what the new European competition was going to be. So we were told it was going to change the face of the European club game. I'm not entirely sure it's done that. We were promised enormous TV revenues. They have spiked and they have subsequently slid. In fact, in 2021, from €57 million, they had slid down to €33 million. We were told of improved formats. I think most people would agree it's currently a shambles. We were told of five commercial partners along the lines of a UEFA model. And yet Heineken are still the lone ship. Amazingly, they now pay €3 million a season, having previously paid €12 million as title sponsor under ERC. We were told of an improved and revamped European Challenge Cup that would grow the game, but currently the tournament has no TV presence, no interest from fans, players or sponsors, and I think most people would say it's become a bit of a wasteland. So by that reckoning, almost every metric by which you would value a tournament is trending downwards. And I don't think any of us at this point would blame COVID. The decline of the Heineken Cup, Shane, to what we have now over the space of 10 years is one of the biggest botched jobs in professional rugby, yes or no?
I think you're overstating some of it there because it's incorrect to say it doesn't mean anything to this current generation of players. It does. And, you know, we have seen
I didn't say it doesn't mean anything to the current players. That was in the Challenge Cup.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah,
sorry,
that was. I said the Challenge Cup is basically. Well, I'll
give you that. So my point being, there is, you know, to win the Heineken Cup means it's still an amazing achievement. That is a massive goal for a huge amount of players. Maybe the clubs, there are fewer number of clubs are really putting their necks on the line to do that, and that's one of the key issues. But those statistics that you read out are incredibly damning. Listen, there was a COVID catastrophe in the middle of it, but I don't think that necessarily is the cornerstone of the conversation here. It's not. The trend wasn't anywhere near the suggestion it was. And I remember when that 10 years ago, I remember because I was concerned at the time, as we all were, because it did feel as if we had a bit of a golden goose. And, you know, the idea of being able to come in and, you know, increase revenues by 100% didn't necessarily seem sustainable at all. I think the key element for European rugby is money, right? Mm-hmm. As hard as that is to say, it is. And I think that's how you would get it to compete with the two large domestic leagues, which are English and the French. And if there's enough money in it for those teams to prioritise it ahead of staying in, not necessarily ahead of staying in the other competition, but actually to give it a real, real look. There's a couple of top teams in England do it anyway. There's a couple of teams in France that do it anyway. Rolands, La Rochelle are a perfect example of that team that are actually fighting on two fronts. But there's too many teams in England, I think, that don't. And there's probably too many teams in France that don't. With the new United Rugby Championship, I think there's a cohort, and we're seeing it even the last weekend, we can see that it means a massive thing to that group still. And maybe that's a commentary on the league, or it's a commentary on, you know, historically how they position it. But they haven't been able to capture, and I think money is the major key, they haven't been able to capture the English and the French teams in the way they should.
I would say as well, I think there's only probably a few teams who are capable of winning it. To your point, I think it does still mean a lot.
Well, the markets would back you up on that. So Leinster have their price set and it doesn't move until the semi-finals. There is no movement amongst the bookies as to who's going to win it.
But I think it's a player. So ironically, I think because a lot of people don't feel like they can compete, more often than not, they don't realise the magic. I think that if you were to go to Saracens, Leinster, Munster, you know, Claremont, Toulouse, La Rochelle.
Claremont got thumped at home by Leicester this weekend. There's the reality of now.
Yeah, but my point is that there are teams that are always going to consistently be there and always capable of doing it. And for them, it has magic. If you're never got close, it becomes a necessary evil. You try your best. You might win a home leg. You lose your away leg. And there isn't a chance to compete for various reasons. I don't think it's not as competitive as it was. I think your team's getting absolutely pumped. And you know, when I said when I played in Northampton, one of my last games for the club, you know, we played Claremont at home, and it was my men versus boys. I think we lost 40-odd points in just the array of stars they had on the field. Now that was just my personal perspective. That's based on nothing other than my own opinion and emotion. But I think it still does retain its magic, but only it's magic for a certain few because they're never going to taste it.
Sell us the current dream, Rog. When you get your Filofax out at the start of the season and you're doing your season planning, where is the Champions Cup? What is it that you're being told by your owners? Where are your emotions around it? What are your players wanting to do in the competition?
Yeah, I think this is a good example of of what can be done. It was very much, a Pro D2 team a few years ago, and now the club has tasted success. They want more. We want more. It's like what happened in Marseille last year is beyond fairy tale stuff, and I say that with hopefully a fair amount of humility, because that became a little dream that has just exploded and united this town and taken to a whole new level. What people, I think, completely underappreciate is competing on two fronts. So the history in the top 14 blows away the arguments for all the other championships, because, the Premiership now is ring-fenced, but there's no relegation. So the circumstances there have changed. So I think when there's whatever over 130 years in the Bouclier and winning that will always be there. So what has happened now is that the French are given 6 weekends to Europe, and they say make the best of that because you're not getting any more pool games. But for me, I think that's pretty fair, because you have the pools, but the pool systems now are a mess with 8 teams qualifying. So that needs to be, I think, reviewed urgently. But once it gets to knockout stages, you can be sure that every team is in it to win. But I think the big difference for me from afar as a player to know is that when we played, the English teams were really, really competitive. Gloucester, Northampton, Leicester, Bath, Wasps. But of those handful now, it's Saracens that are leading the way. You look at, I suppose, what Leinster did to Northampton, or to Gloucester at the weekend. It's a strong Gloucester team. But like to get a thumping like that at home, you can't say that they're contenders for Europe this year. And it applies for a lot of the other teams too, because I think there's less and less teams nowadays that can win it. I think when I played, maybe that was the mindset as a player. It seemed way more open, and that this could happen to, Bath were really strong, and going to the Rec was, if you were to get a result in the Rec, it would have been a huge achievement. Nowadays, it's not a huge achievement.
So Leinster first in the URC against Gloucester fourth in the Premiership, 106-14 over the two legs.
Rog, is it too big a risk? And I think what we're seeing from an England perspective, or the English team perspective, is there's definitely a decision being made, either consciously or subconsciously, and I would say consciously for many of the directors, going, it is actually not worth the risk, sort of burning resource and potentially burning players and fatiguing players and losing our position in a league. Now, as Ronan said, it's less of an issue now because there's not going to be a relegation element. But in France, that has been a case as well, I think, Ronan. But you guys are the anomaly here. So, getting back to almost the first question, how do you position it? What's the feeling? Is it if we get to the, it's definitely not if we get to the knockout stages, then it's all live, because the performances that you've been putting in to get to the knockout stages are fully committed. But are you sort of, what's the general feeling in France with regard to that? I think potentially if you weren't the head coach of La Rochelle, would they be looking at this competition a bit different?
Very good point.
Possibly, but as you know, Shaggy, I've given them no choice, and now they're all in because they've seen the magic of it. They've got to taste it, so they believe in it. While I actually think the French teams, will go really hard the first two rounds, and then they'll weigh up. But like the Leinster situation is probably an outlier, because if you're the Gloucester coach and you're going to, like Montpellier, they get heavily criticised. You bring your first team to Dublin, you're probably going to lose. So you got to be smart, because the following weekend you got another big game with 4 points at stake. While it's very easy for people on the fence to give their opinion on championships that don't have relegation or don't have consequences, where there's very little at stake. The one competition I think that's way above any other competition in rugby at the minute is the top 14, because I'm biased, but I'm living it, and you understand it, and you see how it affects the economy of all the local towns and the buy-in they get from that. Like that will not be shifted, Shaggy. The fact that the priority will always be the local domestic Bouclier, but Europe has a huge, huge place. But it's hard, I think, for the competition to be viewed in its best light when 8 of 12 teams qualify. So, for example, you can qualify with 5 points, and then if you get a good draw, you might be in form, and then you knock out a team in second place, and they'll say, well, yeah, well, obviously they were better than them, but maybe they're not better than them. Maybe they've exploited the loophole. Why, before, when there was, I think, pools, and it was done better, for me, it became a little bit more interesting and probably an enjoyable process for the fan. You look at the first game. Never have we seen the first game of Europe. I'd say it was in it was London Irish against Montpellier, Friday night, primetime TV, European Cup, showpiece, a ground, three quarters empty, zero atmosphere. I said, am I watching the Challenge Cup here?
I think the point you make there is sort of echoed throughout so much of the tournament. I'm going to say a very quick good evening to Lee, and we'll come to you in a moment or two if that's all right, Lee. It's lovely to have you with us. The point you're making about English clubs. So I actually went very kindly as a guest of EPCR to Quinns against Racing, and I had a nice beer beforehand. I took my son and I sat next to a couple of the Quinns players, and I was like, why is Joe Marler not playing tonight? And they said, oh, we're saving him for the Premiership. And this is Quinns against Racing. It's London against Paris. It's Finn Russell. It's all the sort of box office that it was. And I think the message that comes out of that is the Premiership clubs now recognise, as the salary cap is declining, they simply cannot compete on two fronts, and the Premiership is the priority. It's where the money is, etc. The other very interesting thing is, and Ronan, correct me if I'm wrong here, but there is no money for making the latter stages, I think, until you get finals. I don't think there is no money for a Premiership club to make the quarterfinals. So you get the same amount whether you bomb out in the pool stages or whether you make it through but don't necessarily make it to the really sharp end of the tournament.
Well, I think that's one of the that's one of the things I mentioned earlier about, you know, if this was funded in a better way, it does maybe focus the minds.
It's got to be a meritocracy.
Yeah, particularly in England, because of their ring fence at the moment. That issue that Ronan has mentioned is going to remain, obviously. But I do think that if there's an increased commercial imperative, that also bleeds into that decision making as well. The problem is if there's a chance that you will sort of bomb out of the top 14 as a result of trying to fight in two fronts, then that's a major issue. But if it's a case of still competing in the top 14 at a reasonable level and actually having this additionality, which has all the magic and majesty and those scenes that we saw at La Rochelle, I think if we didn't see those scenes last year, it'd be a much more depressing conversation that we're having now, because that was some of the most magical stuff I've ever seen in my life.
But it's the rarity now rather than what used to be. It wasn't year on year, but it was a very regular feeling to see sites like that. But I remember Limerick being shut down as you beat Biarritz many years ago. And
but I would say it wasn't a perfect competition back then either.
For sure.
It definitely wasn't. And there was lots of blowouts. There was, poor teams travelled over. We always complain about the French teams, would give it 100% at home, and then, they wouldn't be there away. We've seen teams get beaten by 100 in the European Cup in the
previous iterations. The Italian side are always a perennial problem.
And how to deal with those. So, it wasn't perfect, but it has gone downhill, and that's the problem. And we did feel, I always did feel, that there was a basis to actually do something better. And in fact, it's actually got worse.
Okay.
I think from an Englishman's point of view as well, just quickly, yes, there has always been magic, but I think there is a bit of rose-tinted glasses, because if you look at the Irish sides, we always used to complain the Irish guy, the league was so piss poor that they only, some of them didn't even play, they didn't really care. All they cared about was Europe. Then we talked about the French sides, exactly what you said, which they would, if they won their home game, then they'd send the big guns. If they lost, they just wouldn't send anyone. They just wouldn't care, and you get two completely opposing teams. Where the English side sort of sat in the middle, when sometimes it would go well, sometimes it wouldn't. But it was a very different, I think people have very different experiences from the different leagues they're in. I don't think there was a general consensus, and I don't think it's ever been uniform.
Tell us, Rog, what winning it did for La Rochelle, and tell us what those scenes and those moments around the port were like. Because as Shane says, that sort of seems to be the beacon to which we're all clinging around European rugby at the moment.
Yeah, I suppose it's very simple. The club has won nothing. We lost in a second division playoff, I think, is the history. So there was zero silverware ever in the history of the club. So, it's kind of hard to, even for me, we've won the European Cup, but sure, afterwards, it was a bit of a blur because the 3 days on the bender was...
Some things don't change.
So, like, did this actually happen? And, you know, because even before it was like, you know, Leinster demolished, obviously, Toulouse with brilliant rugby. And, like, everyone over here just made the job easier for us in the fact, like, that these guys are untouchable, you know, so... The storyline was written a little bit, but we got into them and we got a bit of a luck on the day, obviously. But the scenes afterwards were just, it was just so powerful. You know, they ask the difference between winning as a player and winning as a coach. Just when that jigsaw comes together, you know, it's very, very powerful. And then you come back and you see what it means to the village. And, you know, it's made the atmosphere even better this year, even though we've lost twice at home. But we've got, there's a great buzz and there's a great feeling around the place. And, you know, that's why Europe is very, very, very special to me.
Rog, when Ben Ryan won the gold medal with Fiji, they named a waterfall after him and they changed and made him a chief of a certain village. What would they do with Ronan O'Gara in La Rochelle? Is there a corner of a bar named after you? Is there a golden statue? Like, there must be something that you'll always be invited by. The key to the city?
No, it's geez, it was a few boys right left their mark, you know, on the... So I'm trying to be the sensible coach and you're trying to, like...
Well, the thing is, with that backdrop, you could be in a prison cell. Have they actually let you out since then? It looks like you're in some French dungeon.
That's it. Keep it simple, isn't it? I'm actually in the team room, but there's other memorabilia around, so I won't turn the camera.
The feng shui expert had their day off today.
Very much so. Roger, tell me, from your perspective, if France from this point, given the discrepancy, or the enormous gulf in budgets now, is this just a competition moving forwards, unless they revamp the whole thing?
Hold on. Where's the enormous gulf in budgets? With who?
Well, between French sides, Premiership and URC clubs.
And who has the advantage?
The French.
Well, I think you need to do a little bit of data research on that. I challenge on a lot of them. But just in terms of the playing profile of teams, I'm fully aware of what Irish players are played. If they weren't well played, they'd all be over here. How many players have I tried to get here?
Okay, so take Leinster out of it.
There's a whole new podcast in that for us, but that's for another day.
Okay, always welcome.
It doesn't add up. I'm fully aware of current salaries in the top 14, in the URC, in Japan, in England. And very, 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 very interesting discussions to be had.
Okay. Can you divulge any more on that?
Well, just trying to, for example, going after certain, be it a tight head prop or a number 10 or second row, back row, centre, winger. There's nothing to be had in the URC. Players are played extremely well.
Yeah, I think that's the URC, certainly the Irish teams have flown under the radar as well because of the nature of the way Irish payments come through. It's not, you know, there's a percentage of the team that are covered by the, you know, by Leinster or Munster, but all the, you know, the key players are, or the key Irish players certainly are, you know, under the RFU umbrella, which, and they have been historically, you know, very well paid. Ronan was one of them for many years. So he knows the type of numbers they can get.
They were going to develop Lansdowne Road for years, but they can't just pay him.
You know that third side that they didn't
yeah,
have?
That's
because of Rog.
Currently the Agora Garden.
Yeah, so... So there's definitely, you know, there's probably a little of an untold story there. And the Irish teams have, you know, been able to sort of hide behind that a little bit. I do think there is a significant difference, Ronan, between sort of your playing budgets and the English teams now, who are, you know, salary cap and under, I think, in terms of the teams that can actually, how much money they can generate. I just saw some of the numbers around the top 14 teams, and it does, their playing budgets are significant. I know that doesn't all go on players, certainly, but there is a little bit of anomaly there as well. It's another reason why, you know, the English teams are sort of scared to lose out in Europe.
Okay. Rog, just give us a sort of a 30-second, if you would, what you would love the tournament to be from here. Given the calendars, given your knowledge of all things European rugby, how does Europe become a competition once again that everyone goes, they stop their weekends to watch.
Shell go unbeaten, they go to Dublin, they win the competition, and everyone is happy. I was thinking hard about it in the fact that I see the French president, speaking to my president, isn't open to really giving more time to pool games. That isn't so. You're not gonna get the kind of four pool or six pools of four, and you play each other twice. That those six weekends aren't available, and there'll be a bigger threat. I think coming in is going to be the World Club Championships, which we haven't even discussed today, which is, I think, mapped for 18 months' time. So that is in itself is going to be another huge threat to the competition. I think once this weekend is over, there'll be huge excitement again, I think, because it's into knockout territory and that's when it comes alive.
Okay. Is that a bit of breaking news? I haven't actually read anything about the World Club Championship. Are you sure that wasn't embargoed, Rog, for another day?
No, sorry, but it's always like that's the great thing about France. There's no thing embargoed. There's no rumours that aren't allowed come out because there's just a new news story every day over here. Some basket case after another basket case, so it just keeps flowing. It's good because there's no story too big or small. So, I think that's they're trying to, I think, create that competition. So,
we shall see.
It'll be interesting to see what commercial partners come on board for that.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, as a result of this conversation, and Ronan hit the nail on the head, the idea of the pool games, for me, it's gone. Very few people are interested in these pool games.
Yeah.
A lot of the teams feel as if they're out after the first pool game, and if not, after the second. So you've got a lot of rubbers that nobody is interested in. And I'm even talking about the core supporters that, you know, we go to all the games of their various teams. They're not even interested in it. So how could you possibly bring on, you know, the casual viewer to watch it? But what we do have is, and I'm convinced of this, when it gets to the knockout stages in this competition, historically, on the drier tracks, on the fast ground, it's a phenomenal competition.
Yeah.
And the teams that get to that point want to win it. There's no doubt. And many of them have a history in Europe, or they want to develop a history in Europe. La Rochelle is a perfect example of that. Clermont, the way they resourced it for years, are an example of that. Saracens, the way they resourced it, are an example of that. They're the sort of teams that you want. You either want teams that want to win it because they know the majesty, they know how amazing it tastes to win, or want to put enough resource behind it. Exeter a couple of years ago were similar. So you want those top teams that have had success in their own league going out and playing a knockout competition with more reduced rounds towards the end of the season in its own window. And it doesn't cannibalise any of the leagues. It allows teams to put their best teams out and allows for a greater focus on a more elite level competition. And then if that dovetails with a World Club Championship and a Northern Hemisphere versus Southern Hemisphere game or two games, I'd be interested in that as well. But I'm not interested in the round robin anymore.
Okay.
Well, as such that it exists anymore.
Very good points. Hold that thought. We'll come back to that. Roger, I'm conscious of your time. You've got to get back to planning your next 7-3 thriller straight to DVD production. Just a quick reflection on the win at the weekend. Delighted, relieved, furious.
Double attack there. You're already 13 minutes running late and then you're having a go at my rugby.
I'm so sorry. But your thoughts?
Nothing changed. There's always a super level of contentment when you score your only points in the 81st minute, but it also helps if they become the winning points. So,
and they're against Ulster.
Yeah, the mood could be very different today, but like a lot of good teams, they found a way.
They did.
Wasn't pretty, was very ugly, and we had a tight head playing loose head for 68 minutes, and we had a young Georgian prop, Sandro, who played his first European Cup game and had a brilliant carry, so winners all round.
Good on you. No one will be talking about that when you lift the trophy in a few months' time. Roger, always lovely to chat. Thank you very much. Back to the painting and decorating behind you. It's been really good fun and we always appreciate your views. See you soon. Many thanks to Roger for dialing in. Enormously effervescent as always, and always good to get his views. And it's very, very good of Lee Blackett to join us as well. Former head coach at Wasps, of course. Now backs coach at the Scots. Have I got that right? Backs coach? Skills coach? What are you? Yeah, you are backs coach. It's really good to have you on because we're talking a lot, Lee, about, I suppose, some of the challenges around the Champions Cup right now. And a lot of that does fall on the shoulders, particularly the Premiership clubs and the sort of diminishing salary cap. And I suppose I'd love to get into where exactly Welsh regions are with all things Europe at the moment. Let's start with the Premiership, first of all, and your reflections from your days with Wasps. We're hearing a lot and more that Premiership clubs simply cannot compete on two fronts. They cannot do Europe as well as go for it in the Premiership. When you look back on your time in charge of Wasps, is that very much how it felt? Did you prioritise the Premiership and see how you got in Europe, or was Europe still the draw that it was when your former proud club won the competition twice?
Look, I would totally agree with what you've just said in terms of can you compete on two fronts? I think as well, the way it's set up at the moment with the way the seedings are, so if you're ranked one or two and you get top seed, you can have a real good go at it. When you're ranked seventh or eighth and you've got to face against teams that qualify, teams that got into the finals or domestic competitions, it's tough. It's a tough way to the final. And I think the way the leagues are set up as well, completely different from my first time outside the Premiership coaching. And look, it's completely different. You look at the way the URC been, and you go seven games on the bounce, and then you have 3 weeks off. So you've got a natural break within the season, whereas the Premiership just seems constant throughout, and you're looking for any natural break to happen. You've got to plan really well in the Premiership. It's game on game, and I'd imagine the top 14 is very similar. Whereas the URC, you probably get that natural time to give you guys some time off and look after them. Whereas when you're trying to compete on two fronts, you need a good squad to do it.
Tell me a little bit about your thoughts on the trajectory of the tournament. I mean, you were there as a player. You, I'm sure, have watched countless hours of what was the Heineken Cup. Where do you think the current tournament sits relative to what it was in your playing days?
That's tough. It's definitely still, it's still special. You still get the goosebumps when you hear the music. I think the knockout stages of the competition are still really special. I think the group stages have maybe just got a little bit lost at the moment. You speak to players at the moment. I'll drop Foxy's name in here. I spoke to him the other day and asked his opinion on it. And he said, mate, I don't understand it. You've got a player not understanding the group. There's everything at the moment. I just feel there's more teams in the competition. It's not quite as special as it was. You definitely, if you look now, 24 teams qualify. You used to have to be top six in the Premiership. It's top eight. If you, unfortunately, with Wasps and Worcester, there's eight out of 11 are going to make the Champions Cup. So, look, it's, there seems like there's a few more teams in there now. And yeah, for me, it's I think there's maybe a couple too many teams within the competition, but it's still really special. Once you get to that knockout stage, I still think now there's that special effect of it.
How much does it come down to budget? You know, you talk about teams fighting on two fronts. We've talked about kind of the difference between the English clubs, the Irish clubs, and the French clubs. But in terms of, from your point of view, you know, English clubs, is it all down to money? Is it all down to being able to afford those players? Is it a lost game, or do you think, you know, things can be levelled out?
I think money's always, when you've got a bigger budget, generally you can get a bigger squad and you can compete on two fronts. I think you as you've seen with the Premiership now, the smaller the budget, actually the squads have got smaller. So you can't rotate anywhere near as much. And I think that has a big say. But I think if you speak to your Saracens, I'm pretty sure they'll be definitely going for it, going for both competitions. The stronger squads, like I said, your teams in the middle of the Premiership will be making a decision which competition to go for. I think you always give it a good go early on, and then you see after the first couple of games exactly where you are within qualification, and hopefully you put yourself in a good place, and then you push on.
You said there were too many teams potentially involved. What do you make of the South African teams as a kind of an Englishman? You know, for me, you know, when I was playing in Europe, it obviously wasn't even ever going to be on the radar. That's a complete sort of turn up for the books. Do you have a view on it? Do you care? Do you think it's watered down the nature of the tournament, or that's just the way things are heading?
No, I think they're a great addition. I really do. Having played them out there, I think you'll see those teams at the business end, and they made the competition stronger. Look, the physicality of the pack, but also the rugby they played. They surprised me because I probably when you're in the Premiership, you don't see enough of the URC. And having played against a couple of South African teams, they surprise you. I thought they'd play very much like the national team. They don't. They're big, physical, abrasive pack, but they play a lot of rugby, and I'm sure there'll be a couple of the teams at the business end of this competition.
It's interesting, though. I mean, I love to hear your enthusiasm for them. I think as a spectator, what we're seeing is empty stadiums, and I mean, I'm sure they're getting some very good crowds, but they're playing at 60,000 seaters, so it looks really bad on television. And so much of what went before, I know I'm nostalgic, and I know I hark back to, you know, sepia era, and we had some great days working for Sky, but you know, Toman was sold out, the Massif Central was sold out, Quinn's was rammed, Leicester was full to the rafters. We're watching European games, and Ronan mentioned it, the opening game of this year's tournament, there were a couple of lost people in the stadium who'd been on a tour and were trying to get out, and that was it. And it, optically, you know, I remember the days of, and I've spoken about it before, I'm not harking back to Sky, but they did a very clever thing, Sky, where they went from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 as the channels, and then they went main event, Sky Football, Sky Golf, Sky Cricket. And the main event channel moved from big event to big event to big event. And everything they showed was packed stadiums, it was high stakes, it meant something. And what that meant was that when they picked up the rights to GAA, no one in England had a clue what they were watching, but it was 95,000 at Croker. It was a tribal atmosphere, and people were like, what the hell is this? I'll stop and I'll watch. And the inversion of that is if you watch something on whatever the channel is, and there are 15 people in the stadium, and the atmosphere is flat, you're just like, well, if no one cares enough to go, why should I care enough to pause with my remote control?
Yeah, I don't think those two things are unrelated as well, because there has been an issue with packaging of this competition. You know, it did go to a broadcaster that didn't have the same footprint, that couldn't generate the same interest.
And this isn't a criticism of the on-screen talent. They do a phenomenal job on BT. This isn't a them and us. It's just the nature of the power of the marketing behind it.
And also then, you know, I think there was an understanding that they it wasn't reaching enough people at a couple of years ago, and then they had the terrestrial element to it. And I was part of that, you know, those broadcasts over the last couple of years with Virgin Media. But the problem with that, we were broadcasting on, the packages were so poor that we were broadcasting an Irish audience, and we were broadcasting, like, you know,
in French. That
would
be
not far off. But two English teams, two French teams that weren't relatable to the audience. It was a nonsense. Now they've subsequently changed that. But again, it's another iteration, and it seems like they have to make an error to get into a decent position. The packaging of it from a television perspective hasn't worked and has gone downhill significantly from where it was before. And I'm a fan of a kind of a mixed behind paywall and terrestrial broadcaster model. But the problem is the sort of almost the damage that has been done trying to get that formula right has led to the situation that you've said, where people aren't interested in turning up or as interested in turning up. And then that creates a cycle because less people want to view, or they say, well, why am I watching this when nobody's turning up as well? And listen, with regard to the South African teams, right, they've improved the United Rugby Championship. They're at a higher level, and they care. They will care about Europe, and they'll put more resource behind Europe than maybe some of the English teams. So ultimately, the standard will go up. So whether you like it or not, and I don't know if I was at the time, I didn't feel great about them coming into the United Rugby Championship, and I don't know if I feel great about them coming into the European Championships. But you can't put that genie back in the bottle. It's out, and actually, I think they have improved the league, and I think they will improve this competition because they'll be here at the business end.
I think it's interesting. Alex made this point the other day that, you know, when Sky decided not to, renew rugby or whatever, lost the rights, it's had no detrimental impact to their business anyway. You know, that's not being missed. And I think the assumption is with rugby that there is such an engaged audience, but I think it is a bit of a niche sport. And actually, if you don't get it all in one place and you don't have the simplicity, you don't get the format right, you don't have the access, I think it, you know, the broadcast is doing far more damage to the sport than rugby not being on a certain channel will do to them. And I think that's really indicative of something. And well, I think, sorry, Karen.
Yeah, no, and you're, that's an interesting point. I think sometimes because we're immersed in rugby, we don't realise that rugby is a niche sport. And I come from Ireland and you know, rugby, I think, is the fourth sport in Ireland. And it gets massive, maybe a disproportionate coverage in the media and on TV. There's a lot of rugby on TV, but that's where it is. Over here, you know, it's well behind, you know, the big, the major sports over here. And rugby, and sorry, football in particular, dwarfs everything to such a degree that, you know, sometimes you find yourself or with people that maybe don't know rugby as well, having conversations about rugby in the same light as football. It's absolutely nowhere near it. And there's a danger that, and maybe that was, you know, it was indicative of some of the conversations that were being had when this, you know, new EPCR was being set up. Was almost an eye. Well, you know, look at the growth potential and the growth that we've seen in football. It's rugby's a different thing altogether.
Yeah, but that's everything's always in comparison to football. Yeah. Football has won that race and been around the world three times before, you know, rugby's put its pyjamas on. I'd say it's interesting with rugby. Everyone's keen to tinker with the rules, tinker with formats. But actually, probably the most glaring error is how do people see it? How do they access it? Where do they view it?
Okay.
Is it being advertised and is it being pumped up? Yeah. Because Europe was so good because it was on Sky, it was showcased, it was hyped, it was promoted, it was seen. People always complain about the Autumn Internationals being on Amazon, for example. You know, when I BT Sport, I'm not, again, I know I've got good friends who work there, I think they do a great job. That's how every sort of insult starts, isn't it? I'm not one of them, yeah, but let me tell you this. Because when I have the package at home with Sky, I have to pay an extra thing to get BT. Yeah. So it's already on another extended thing. If you don't have BT broadband or BT thing, it's already a sign up. So all these people complain, it's already on a bolt-on channel, which I think makes a massive difference. So
well, they would say you could do either or. This isn't a Sky against BT thing.
No, it's not. But I just think the point is that you summed it up. It's too small a sport for people not to see it. And as we know, human nature is particularly lazy. The path of less resistance is what we all go for. If it's not in front of you, it's not part of the package. If it's not bolted on, people won't watch it. You know, we were talking about the women's game the other day and what a profound level of success they've had, because they used to do the double headers at Twickenham. And the reason they did it was they were hoping people would be so drunk they'd stay in the seats to stop to watch the women's game. Now that it stands completely on their own two feet and it's taken time and exposure to develop that, I think Europe needs a complete overhaul of that level of exposure and interest and to tell the stories. And actually, ironically, as a player, I would have loved to play the South African sides. I think, romance of Europe and that kind of thing, exactly what Shane's saying, the genie's out the bottle. But as a player, I'd love to travel and play against South African teams and play against players I'd never get to play again. I think as a player, for me, that's very exciting.
We'll come on to what it potentially looks like. But Lee, I want to come back to you because the revamped tournament, and correctly some will argue, is a meritocracy. But what it does mean is that we're very unlikely to see Edinburgh, Glasgow. I mean, Edinburgh actually doing quite well this year, but Edinburgh, Glasgow, and certainly the Welsh regions. I mean, I've got a quote from Mark McCafferty in 2014. We need the Welsh regions back in the quarterfinals, he says. And that was part of the selling point of the new EPCR tournament. We've got one in the whole competition this year, the Ospreys. I mean, given what you are experiencing now at the Scarlets, do you see, well, firstly, any way back for the Welsh regions as a whole, as a competitive entity in what is the European competition at the moment? Do you see the appetite? Do you see the potential? Or has the ship sailed, so to speak?
No, I think everyone wants to try and do well in the competition down in Wales. I just think at the moment there's a loads going off the field at the moment. It's been a tough couple of months really for the players and everyone down there. To be fair to them, they're just getting on with things, but with the funding and everywhere it's going and the direction it's going at the moment, it's been pretty difficult. It's been difficult for recruitment for clubs, but it's also been really difficult for the players because there's players that are out of contract this year and no one's been spoken to as of yet.
Have you therefore stepped from the frying pan into the fire in some ways?
I stay well away from that. I just laugh at Peely having to deal with it all.
Right. I'm not saying you're not the common denominator, are you, Lee? Like someone's cursed you. Like you're not the bad penny that keeps sinking all the ships, are you? Because don't come anywhere near me.
No. If it had been you, Hask, it probably would have been your wage that has sent everyone down. Yeah. But well, not with mine, mate.
pay the money, get the quality.
Get the chat. Yeah. I mean, here's a million-dollar question. If you've got the answer to this, you're solving Welsh rugby in a nutshell. But what would it take for Wales to get back in again? I mean, is it going to be a reduction in the number of regions? Is it going to be greater funding from sources as yet to be identified? Can you ever see, given what you're experiencing, a way back to the top table for these Welsh regions?
Look, you only have to look at the national team to see how competitive the national team is. So there's the players there to do it. I just have to keep working on it. I think there's a lot to learn from Ireland, their academies, the way they're bringing through players. I think that's a massive thing on the strength, because you look at the Irish teams and they're not full of foreigners, but there's a lot of strength in there, and their academies are exceptional in Ireland. I think there's a lot to learn there, and I think if you look at the national team, they're fighting at the top end of the Six Nations for majority of the years. So there's the players there, but I think there's a lot of hard work to put ourselves in that position.
I'm going to ask these two their thoughts in a moment or two, but it's the question I asked Ronan, really. As someone who's now coached in England and Wales, what would you like this competition to look like, Lee? I know it's a sort of million-dollar question, but we're hearing more and more that the group stages sort of are losing their appeal. Does it become a knockout for you? Would you try and fit it back into 9 weekends? Would you revamp it according to the 8 weekends that we currently got? What would you love this competition to look like?
I used to love it as it was. And I know it's hard. I know we're talking about that extra weekend and going back. There was everything I used to. You used to work so hard to get in. It was so hard to be in the top six of the Premiership and then get a chance to have a go at it with only 20 teams, and then you had those back to backs. How good were round 3 and 4 when Brilliant. You went back to back, and it's at that. Honestly, the back end of the competition, there's nothing wrong. You can see how good those games are and how excited everyone is. We just seem to have lost our way, I would say, with the new format in terms of the group stages.
And do you think we can get back to that, or do you think that it is going to be, I mean, particularly with the South Africans now and more chat around a World Club Championship, do you think it's going to be control, alt, delete, and let's start again with something new?
I don't really know. That's probably for the people who want to make those decisions, because... But I do think that just the group stages just need addressing, and it'll be the money men that make the right decision on these kind of things. But as you said, probably the enthusiasm everyone's got for the group stages isn't quite there at the moment. But I think that when we get to knockout stages, everyone is.
Okay. Thank you so much, Lee, particularly for persevering with our hopeless broadband. But it's been very nice to have you on, and really value your opinion on where Europe is right now. And good luck with all things Scarlets over the next few weeks and months. We'll keep a keen eye.
Cheers.
Very good of him to join. You were going to say?
The interesting thing that came to mind there as I was listening to Lee, we're talking about European rugby, and then we also know there's this whole concussion piece that's going on at the moment. Like, rugby's in quite a fragile position.
You reckon?
You know, it really is, isn't it?
I'm finding a news story right now. Head coaches all leaving 9 months out from World Cups. Are you therefore concerned about...
Well, I think you have to be, because we've seen what's happened with Europe. It hasn't been given enough care, and to some degree it's withering on the vine. If, as we said earlier, if we didn't have those scenes in La Rochelle, at the end of last season, we'd maybe even more depressed about it. That gives me kind of hope. There's widespread concerns about Welsh rugby. We know the clubs there or the regions there are, in major issues. And the Premiership is suffering some catastrophic issues as well. There are upsides, though. I think international rugby, when it's good, is excellent. I'm very excited about the World Cup coming up. I think top 14 is a massively...
Do you watch it?
I don't, but it's a success story in France, and that's
sure.
all it needs to be. You know, it needs to work there, and that's where it works. It doesn't, it doesn't appeal to us for lots of different reasons, but, could that potentially change over time, that become almost a world league? That's not necessarily
So I don't want to hop back to
possibilities.
But do you remember the days of La Liga on Sky? And it was Ronaldo and Beckham and Owen and McManaman. And, you know, La Liga was a thing that football fans watched. Why has the top 14 never had? We had it on Sky for years. No one ever watched it. Barely rated.
Yeah, I think the product wasn't good. You know, and there was a
presenting
very...
Presenting one great
eye. Yeah, okay, well, that's half the problem.
But the product wasn't good.
I think
good.
It went straight to air, actually, to be honest with you.
Or wasn't. Because we didn't have the emotional connection to it that existed in France when you were looking at it from a pure rugby spectacle, it wasn't good. It is better now. Rugby is better. I think the league is better for the sort of increased numbers of external coaches that have gone into it. So, you know, that is it's benefiting from that. Listen, the other point is, you know, United Rugby Championship has got better.
It
has got better. It has.
And to quantify that or qualify that for me.
I think the standard of rugby is better. There's greater competition. There's more likelihood of, and this is largely thanks to the South African teams. You know, they won it last year they won it. They'll be at the business end again. It makes things more interesting. That product is better. There's more people watching it than there were before. So, but also...
when you say more people watching it, on television,
yeah, viewership is up, and I believe viewership is up. And now there's more.
There's shout a lot of.
If you
very
say
big
it with convincing tone.
There you go. There's
it
more.
Could be. I think
they
viewership.
Said that, no, I think that there's more people watched there's, it. Last there's time. More. There's 5 more, million people in Wales. Like,
there's more. There's more teams in it, which is
for sure. I mean, that's well. is that a way to improve success?
No, but I watch quite a bit of it. I think it's better for having the South African teams in it. Not a perfect competition. It doesn't have the history, and it needs time to develop a history. And if you go to the average URC player who hasn't won in Europe before, you can ask them what they want. They'll want to win Europe first.
Yep.
If you ask the average French top 14 player who hasn't won anything. Yeah, ask them what they want to win. I think it'll be the top 14
first. You're right.
If you ask the average Premiership player, what would they win first? I think it'd be the Premiership as well.
And I completely agree with you. And 10 years ago, it would have been Europe.
Do you think?
100%. What would you, as a young player?
Here's the man.
Yes, I would have said Europe because it was seen as the pinnacle.
Yeah.
You want to win the Premiership. But actually, Europe had more kudos. I think Europe was, there was more adventure, there was more excitement, there was more narrative, there was more fairy tale. And I think what's missing for me for rugby is that, Shane's concerns, I think, are concerns that we've echoed, that at the moment, there are two different elements or factions pulling rugby apart. There's obviously the money, there's the management, and there's kind of the different leagues and the different teams. You know, the fact for rugby to survive, you know, you need to condense things down, you need to get the purity. So I would have the Premiership and I would have Europe. I'd bin everything else off. I would make Europe a knockout platform. I would put it all on one channel. And I would hype the fuck out of it. I'd sack off the Championship, sack off all that other stuff, put the resources into the Premiership, keep grassroots where it is, and I would focus on that. And I would keep the international calendar. I'd play less games. I'd change player welfare. I'd reduce contact in training. I'd put my more investment in social media, SEO for clubs, more on content creation. I'd build superstars. I'd put more money into sponsorship. I'd hype the fuck out of it. And I'd make everything into spectacle. And that's what I would do.
That is a good manifesto.
I think people are falling asleep at the wheel. They're faffing around. They can't make decisions. And I think, unfortunately, Europe, you know, the format's changed. You know, the genie out of the bottle analogy is absolutely perfect. You've got to make that more of a spectacle. And I think also, just remember with the South African teams as well, you know, when we interviewed, we were talking to Elmer about, for example, the South Africans women's team. You know, they have absolutely no independent funding. It's an afterthought. It's very behind. I would say, having played in the Super 15 over there and gone to South Africa and watched South African Super 15 games when I've been over there with England to touring sites, they're not full stadiums anyway. They never have been. It's been quite a quiet game. Yet, you know, if you go to... you know, the big stadiums over in South Africa for a South Africa game, they'll be rammed to the rafters because that's where their passion is. There's a lot of fair weather fans. I don't think it's the same in Ireland. I think, you know, I think they are more tribal in regards to the Leinster, Munster, Ulster.
Why is that? Is it bigger regions coming together?
Yeah,
it is good at uniting Ireland rugby, isn't it?
Ireland almost fell into the model. It was very useful that we had naturally, we're split up into four provinces. It was just about the amount of teams that we could handle. And there was a pre-existing rivalry there. That rivalry became more pronounced because it wasn't as pronounced. It was a very a strong club game, and that's where the rivalries existed. But that, and it's still there, but the provinces have taken over everything. It became very, very tribal. Munster did a brilliant job in Europe and getting that travelling support. Like Leinster, I think, build on it. So you've got two massive cohorts there. Ulster kind of have their own cohort as well, kind of slightly behind, but sort of constantly building as well, and had their day in the sun as well. So some of it's been natural, some of it's been organic, some of it's been more contrived. The model works, that they have the support of the union. To Ronan's point, just to go back to it, if you look at trying to recreate maybe a Leinster team with a premiership budget, I think you really struggle to do that. People don't really think about it like that. Try and put all those players together. Yeah. Oof, I don't know if you'd do it.
This has actually been a very therapeutic show, I think, in some ways. Well, I want it to be, because I want to come on to what does it actually look like, because I think the two of you are saying quite similar things, so we'll expand on that. I think what this show has made me realise is that this is possibly the first time I've realised I'm becoming a dinosaur, because I am really sad about what it was into what it's become. And I think, I came loaded with all sorts of stats and things that are not really worth doing, because it's just all rather depressing. But I think when you look at what the Heineken Cup was, which was not perfect, but it was considerably better than it is now, it was broken up by the clubs in the promise of becoming this absolute incredible entity of €100 million turnover a season by season. We are miles away from that. I think everybody is united in the fact that whatever the pool stages now are an absolute waste of time. The format, even by the words of Jonathan Davis, is unintelligible. I don't know if you could explain it. Not sure you could explain it when it was six pools of four. Could you?
No, but when it's knockout, you can't explain it.
I was by surprised that Foxy even talked to Lee Becker.
Well,
I would have got no fans allowed, mate. What are you doing?
If you look at what they have done it in the new guys, if you're going to destroy a tournament, you've ticked pretty much every single box. There's no narrative to the competition now until you get to the really sharp end of it. I think most people would agree that the South Africans are probably teams sitting in the wrong congregation at the wrong wedding. I think people are like, great, they're here, but not quite sure why type thing. I think you look at the fact there's no real financial incentive, so teams aren't really that fussed whether they make it through or not. I think the organisers have cocked it up with their loyal partners. Heineken are paying 25% of what they were, and they've singularly failed to attract any new ones, despite that was the great goal. I think, it's just withered, which I don't think rugby can afford to do.
No,
so I think
can. And it should be the flagship Northern Hemisphere competition outside of the Six Nations, which it was. And I think why you are particularly passionate about it, and because why we are passionate about it as well, because you kind of felt an ownership to it.
Well,
you felt part of the story, yeah. And we
used to make money out of it. Yeah, I'm very passionate about things I used to make money.
He
used to be employed in a mainstream role, so no wonder he's nostalgic. But can't get a gig for love nor money these days.
I'm genuinely not, if it had gone on to be what it was, great, stand aside. What I'm sad about is that I felt very invested in it, and it's sort of got all taken away. And now I look at it, I'm like, what the hell have you done with it? Type thing. And I think there are a lot of other people who feel that way. Regardless, what does it now become? You think it is going to become a knockout tournament that sits at the end of the season?
32
teams, round 16, quarters, semi-final.
I don't know what it's going to be. It's going to
just make it up, like you've made up the increased viewing figures.
I don't know what it's going to be. It is going to become, but it will not be sustainable, I don't think, until they get a hold of it commercially. And that's been an issue. So that statistic that Heineken are now paying 25% of what they did is scarcely believable. That is so, so incredibly damning. They're still tweaking with the format in terms of terrestrial.
They've got to start again with the format. The TV format, how it's broadcast.
But I think we're now got to a point with the overall format and the structure of it that there's probably an appetite for significant change, because in order to keep those balancing,
the equilibrium?
The needs of those leagues and those teams.
Yes.
Okay. I don't think we're in a position where there's an appetite or a possibility to go back to the previous iteration of the competition. So that means, what are you looking forward to? So We know that the knockout stages of it works.
Yep.
We know that there's potential for an added wrinkle, which is the World Club Championship that can be a week or 2 weeks at the end of it. We also know that there is something in that. It's funny, Lee mentioned it, that last weekend or that back-to-back weekend of games. Is there a way to incorporate that into it where you have a two-legged first round of the competition and then you're retaining something of that what previously worked from the pool stage, and then you're getting into the stuff that people really care about.
People need Jeopardy.
That means, I think, that retains the prestige of the competition. You've got to make sure that there's a value in the teams entering it, or making it into it, and then being rewarded for winning it as well. And you get those pieces in play, then you've got something that we would be interested in and proud of. But I don't think we're in a position where we can look back on what existed, slightly with rose-tinted glasses, as we've said, and say, if we do that again, it'll work. I think that ship has sailed and we have to look at something entirely new.
And that's why I think this is cathartic, is that whilst I'm sad for what was, I'm actually potentially quite excited about what it could become. Because if you start to build this tournament, which does feel a little bit 100-esque, a bit IPL-esque, it potentially is new kits, it's a draft system, it's additional budgets on your player salary caps. You can start to actually then do something that is a really strong narrative over the space of 5 weekends. Hask on the decks.
I hate the sound of some of that. I absolutely hate
it. I know you
do,
but that makes you the dinosaur. Yeah, you know, my son, who is 10, who is the future of watching rugby, would be bang up for that, of a draft system where he can do something on an app to pick his Fantasy 15 and who can help design the Quinn's kit, and it's going to be TikTok and it's YouTube. That is, that's evolved as I.
TikTok, YouTube, designing kits, fan engagement, that is the cornerstone of what they should be doing and they should be developing out, certainly. I'd have reservations about a draft and moving away from that sort of tribalness that's important and dropping other players in from different teams into existing teams.
Don't you think that would be quite exciting?
I know, I think it would be terrible. I hate it. I think it would be everything against rugby.
Why?
I despise it.
Why?
But just one
because it's a standalone competition.
I'll come back to it. Because actually rugby is based on, and we've seen it in some of the problems that Wales have, is that tribalism matters.
Look,
drop in two Munster players into the Leinster team.
Okay, well maybe you pick them from you pick them from outside. Side the teams that have qualified.
I think it's gimmicky.
I think you do need it. Look what Ronaldo going to, I don't even know the name of his club, but their following has gone from 44 million.
But we also said, what was the issue? We're not football. So we need to lean into the things that we're good at, and we have enough superstars that can be high level. We have enough that can make this competition good. My worry though is, I'm just saying, you feel buoyed by the opportunity here. Who's going to make sure this happens?
Well,
is it the same people? Is it the same people who said that it was going to be a £100 million competition now and we're going to have bigger viewership and it was going to be Welsh, we're going to be in the quarterfinals and everything was going to be rosy and we're going to have five partners instead of one that's paying 25% of what they're doing?
Yes, and I suppose the point that leads on from that is that actually if you start going even more elite, and it's only the best of the best, the rest of the game's going to wither. I mean, you're leaving.
But
Wales are left behind.
But
anyway,
I think it is
right
going
now.
To. I think my point is it is going to wither.
Well, the whole game.
I think parts of it can survive. I think parts of it can be reformatted. I think,
basically cutting Welsh rugby out of the club game.
I'm saying to you that clearly, as it stands, some things are going to limp on and they're ultimately going to wither and die, and some are going to come to the fore. Some are structured better, some aren't. I think if you see it in any sport, in any landscape at the moment, unfortunately, because money is in such short demand and because the game has not developed into what we expect it to do post-professionalism, it isn't going well. We want it to go. Numbers across, apart from the women's game, everything's down, right?
Yeah.
So just on that, right? So what about this? And yes, you could say it cuts the Welsh teams out of it, or does it provide a level of opportunity for teams that are now, fighting on two fronts to get themselves together, to rebuild, to generate, to make sure they have a team that can compete in the league that they're in and actually put themselves in a position and build over time so that they can get into this elite competition at the knockout stage. And that does not mean, I'm not saying that all the money from this elite competition stays within the teams that are in that competition. We know well that that is not a good model for long-term success.
Good luck getting a pound out of the hands of those who are in it to give to someone else.
Well, that, maybe that was the issue, that, you know, from when they went from a union-led competition to a club-led competition.
Quite clearly it was. Quite clearly it was. So, I mean, do you think where we sit here now, I mean, I was trying to finish on a positive, but actually what you've done is really extinguished my hopes.
No, I think, look, it's different. Because of all the things you've talked about you like, what you're suggesting would eradicate those bits,
yeah,
but it would bring other bits that rugby's missing. So you're both on you're both just different sides of the fence, but both, you know, pushing for a similar sort of thing. Everything we've cheered on with Europe, the idea of drafts and other bits and pieces would kill it, right? But equally, does rugby...
It's not going to be Europe.
No, it does rugby need something like that? I would say yes. I think it needs to look at itself. We've talked about smaller formats. We've talked about more accessibility. We've talked about better media. You know, the Tens game, they tried to involve whatever it was to try to revamp England and make it appeal to the younger generation who, in the words of Eddie Jones, only have 19 minutes of
seconds.
Seconds, sorry, 19 seconds of...
Attention.
So, look...
Yours is gone, even in saying that.
Sorry.
Well, like,
I'm sorry.
19 minutes of spare word and the...
That's my point. I just think, look, it has to change. We don't think we need necessarily more things. We need to look at what we've got and completely change it. But unfortunately, I think you're going to have to cut off some of the dead wood. I think you're going to have to. Otherwise, the dead wood and the game that struggles will bring the rest of it down because there just isn't the appetite. And unfortunately, all the big decisions that need to be made in rugby are not being made. We couldn't get a global calendar. We couldn't get other bits and pieces changed. World Rugby are still dragging their feet around these concussion protocols. You know, clubs are still in charge. It's very, you know, the head coach is getting sacked from England and being allowed to go straight away to the competition. It's all up for grabs. There needs an overhaul of all of it. But I think there is still potential because the fans who invested are there. I think we can capture more fans. And actually, ironically, the game on the field is end-to-end stuff.
In the Premiership, it is.
In the Premiership. But also top 14, you know, top 14 is still pretty exciting. I mean, I've never watched the URC.
I was about to say that.
RUC.
Okay.
It's about to say.
So we came into this saying, you know, where are we with Europe? At the end of a very entertaining, emotional, sort of anecdotal hour and whatever it's been, where are we? Where are we going?
Do you know where we should have? We should have this conversation again post the final. And I think that frames your outlook slightly different. We've gone through the worst initial stage of Europe ever, I think,
yeah,
because the format is so complicated. I think it's Ronan spoke to it that you think it's actually not even particularly fair necessarily either.
But also you can absolutely cock the whole thing up and still end up in the knockouts.
Yeah, so that feels that it's not particularly equitable. But there is still this magic that exists in the knockout phases and... You know, I love it. I love that side of it. So,
well, you bloody always won it.
Yeah, well, there you are.
No wonder you love it. I mean, fucking hell. I mean, ask a club who couldn't get out of it whether they love it or not. Isn't it one? Yeah.
And listen, Calvisano. Maybe that is part of it, you know. And, you know, I only won it near the end of my career, and it was the pinnacle. It was everything that I thought my club career was going to be framed around. And to a large degree, that's the case.
Okay. Final thought?
Look, I mean, I think it's a great idea. He's full of ideas. We should have got him on the team. He is. It's not a problem. I think we should reframe it, look at it at the end of it. I think, unfortunately, look, I think there are some positives. We always talk about it. And remember, we are talking about the details. So when you have to unpack everything, you always have to come to the negatives. I think there are probably more negatives in rugby at the moment on paper. But the fact of the matter is, there are some amazing emotional experiences and encounters that are going to happen. There is a lot of investment. There is some stories to be told. There is going to be some big moments. There is some fantastic rugby to be watched. You know, and as you get towards that, those latter stages, weather gets better. You know, this is an awful time of year. You know, we're recording this on the most depressing Blue Monday, apparently, of the year. So all of us are slightly jaded. Our mental health issues are coming to the fore. By the time we get to the sun, the hard tracks, the big games, the razzmatazz, I think we'll be slightly more invested in it. But is there better things to be done? Can we change it? Does it need to be changed? 100%.
Don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened. I've said that a few times in my career. Well done. I think... I hope
well, after knocking your missus in.
Why have you always got to lower it to that
sorry,
point?
I can just imagine. Don't cry.
I think we net out with, it once was great, it ain't now, but it might yet be. And it maybe is time for a competition that is solely built for 2023, the Gen Z generation, and it is bells, whistles, razzmatazz. It's Hask on the decks. It is time. There is an opportunity here for a properly modern tournament.
Yes, but that doesn't just mean appealing to one generation either, because it's important to bring that cohort with you.
But look at what the 100's done. What Europe should be is what the 100 has done for cricket.
I think as if it's stating the obvious here, it's a different sport.
You know? It is, but also the as well,
it's
the
not
same.
It's not because I don't have a deep knowledge of cricket rivalries in England and the UK, but I don't think we can move away from some of the traditions and some of the rivalries that make rugby brilliant and make rugby sing. And I use the examples again of that being trying to be forced into the Welsh regions and it never working. And they're still dealing with that now, 25 years or so more after professionalism. So listen, there are elements of this to be taken from the 100 to a new sports are marketed. I'm sure the NFL, Aussie rules football, league in Australia as well. There are elements of all these different sports, but there is not just a cookie cutter to go, we're going to be the rugby version of the 100, because I don't think that works. We have to recognise what's important to our game, where our fan bases are, what people are interested in, how we can attract more people, and how we can develop a product that's as broad as possible. And that isn't necessarily stealing an idea in its totality from another organization. It's actually taking a lot of consideration and thought and ideation and developing and building on what we already have, or the best parts of what we have.
Well done. Thank you. Thank you to Ronan. Thank you to Lee as well. We've pedaled around the roundabout a few times. Why don't we throw it open? If you've got an idea, a solution, drop it in the comments section. Send us an email, a tweet, an Instagram. How do you do that? Send us a thought on Instagram.
Don't play coy with us, mate. You know exactly how to slide into a DM on Instagram.
Or a TikTok. Jeep. Or a MyFace or a Spacebook or wherever it is.
A Bebo.
Yeah, Bebo. Well done. I think, interesting. We've opened the conversation. Others with far more intellect and sort of finger on the pulse will certainly have some solutions sooner or later. Let's hope whatever it is not too far away. Well done, fellas. Thank you very much for your thoughts, your feedback, your ideas. We have got a special for you. It's actually out already. If you haven't caught it yet, we spoke to Eddie Jones a number of hours after he was appointed the new Wallaby head coach all the way through to 2027, which of course will be a World Cup in Australia. So do check that out if you haven't already. Fascinating this week. I'm sure there are intellectual people with their finger on the pulse who will no doubt have answers to some of the questions we've posed. And we very much look forward to hearing them. We have been The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. We will see you next week. The show is produced by Shara Kilgallen and Andy Angelo. The Good, The Bad and The Rugby is a Folding Pocket production. Look after yourselves. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Good, yay, The Bad, and The Rugby, oof, with Alex Payne, James Haskell and Mike Tyndall. Thanks for listening.